become an acute source of trouble. Now Rudy has come and acting as the guru of Vyasadeva. He praises him. In the next verse you'll read that your vision is completely perfect, your fame is spotless, you are firm in your vow and situated in truthfulness. But then again he points out that he has missed something. Now we have to remember that Vyasadeva, he's compiling all the Vedic literatures with the help of Lord Ganesh. He is in his cave in the Himalayas. I've been to that cave. Of course, there's that one cave near Badrikashram. And you go, that's about like 4 kilometers or so from Badrikashram, and the cave of Vyasadeva, and just before that is the cave of Lord Ganesh. Transcribed. Those who are the priests and so on, they say actually that is not actually the cave of Vyasadeva. He lives in the Mohaya, but they've made one cave. There's a deity of Lord Vyasadeva inside. In the Lord Ganesha's cave, there's a deity there. It may have been he came there sometime, but he is a residing Mohaya, that inaccessible part. So he is there. He is in his meditation in the Himalayas. And that place is very austere. You can only go there. Even the Badrikashram, you can only go there a few months a year. Otherwise it's snowing. You can't go there. So only the topmost yogis can stay there. Even the Badrinarayan, the Narayanarayan, the Didi under the Badrikashram is there in the temple. Please follow me that. Of course, when the snow comes, then we have to go down. But we leave the paraphernalia, the worship, on the altar. And when we come back after many months, we see that it's been used. That the great devotees and yogis who live high in the Himalayas, who have transcended the heat and the cold and just situated in their own self-realization, they come. Being very devoted to the Supreme Personality of God, and they are doing your mission while all the others are below. So there was Vyasadeva, was residing high in the Himalayas, very beautiful there. Very, very beautiful. And before it was you couldn't hardly get there. Now there's a road there, because the army put a road there. It was on the border there, China. But they have some military presence, and so they built the road. Before there was no road, so you have to go for climbing. When you read about the Pandavas going, it was just like a trail. You have to know how to go there. It was very difficult. So generally, it is a place for the tapasya. You practice austerities, get away from everything, you know, high in the Himalayas. And it's not very easy. You have to practice the yoga, practice the meditation. So he, of course, Vyasadeva, he is the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of God. But there is some leela going on here, so that Narada Muni can come and give instruction, very specific instruction, about the glories of the Supreme Personality of God. Now, Narada Muni praises Vyasadeva. You have done very, very wonderful Karma Kanda section, Jnana Kanda, even Upashana Kanda, you know, about the higher thing, but specifically the glories of Krishna you haven't done. In the Puranas as many mentions of the different incarnations, but Krishna is, you haven't. So in one sense, how to do the fruitive activities you've described and at the same time follow the different processes and gradually elevate you can worship different devas according to your nature. And so, you know, those who are inclined in that way to enjoy the world but still be elevated to some degree, well, they can worship this David. So you've done, you've done like that, but in one sense, you are thinking to elevate people gradually for those who are still very attached to the world. But in another sense, you've confused everyone. This was Narada Muni's point to Vyasadeva. You're confused because this worship, the worship of that deva, the other worship of the other deva, the other worship. And so, and in every Purana and every some of the Devas in the Veda, they're referred to as the Bhagavan also, Bhagavan Indra, Bhagavan Agni, Bhagavan Chandra. And they are like Bhagavan, they're very powerful. But they are not the supreme Bhagavan. Beyond Nahe Guru Sadagana Prabhavam Namahaj. He said, so in one sense you help people, but in another sense you have confused people. Because they are doing so many rituals and so many processes, so many ceremonies, so much worship of different demigods. But you've created a feeling of pantheism, of worshipping many, the many gods. But these, we have to understand, they are demigods. They are not the ultimate supreme. So Narayana was saying like that. And this is what, and here he's saying that you have described, what's this verse? They come and up if you to bow, they shall be the Jnana Alamnirajan. Now, you have described the path of the Jnana to understand what is the Brahman, knowledge of self, even though free from all material affinity. Now, generally, there are three paths for those who are very attached to life in the world. There's a path there in the Karma Kanda section of the Vedic described. The path of the karma. Actions in the world and getting the reactions in the world. So generally, and Prabhupada mentions here that most people are on this path. Most people are on that path. The path of the karma kanda section. Actually, people these days are in the Kali Yuga, they're not even following the karma kanda section. They're just engaged in karma activity, actions in the world, and engaging in gross sense gratification in the name of enjoyment. Everyone wants to enjoy. And of course, the goal is that we want to increase our enjoyment to our lives and decrease our suffering. But quite often, our plans don't go according, our life doesn't go according to our plan. We plan. Everyone wants to increase their enjoyment, but quite often their suffering comes. Instead of increasing enjoyment, we're finding our enjoyment decreasing and our suffering increasing. Enjoyment decreasing and our suffering increasing. And so who can say what enjoyment you'll get or what suffering you'll get? That is all your karma. Because not only have you acted in this life, you've acted in the last life, and you've acted in many lives. So you're getting your reaction. So we've accumulated so much karma, it can't all fit in one life. The karma, the actions, and the reactions to our actions, for life in the world, there must be, that is the law of nature, action and reaction. So we've had so many lives, so we're accumulating, doing actions, some actions are good actions, some actions are very bad actions. And so we have to get the results of that. So karma is both action and reaction to action. It's both considered karma. So then we've done so much action and getting so many. It goes over many lives, many stages of the karma. And then because you've had so many lives, it becomes quite complicated. It becomes very complicated that no one can fathom it all. Only the Supreme Personality of God and those empowered by Him can understand what the Yamaraj or something like that. They can understand what is your karma. You can't even understand what is yours. You can't remember your past life, the one before that, the one before, how you acted. So it's like we see some people, they're very good people, but every now and again some bad things happen to them. Why? And somewhere, some life, they did something not very good. And now they have to get the reaction. It's not automatically. You know, some people think that automatically you'll live your life and just automatically you'll, at the end of your life, you'll go to heaven. Mm-hmm. So, many Christians think like that. You live your life and you just automatically just go to heaven. No matter what you did in your life, you'll just go to heaven. Well, if you say you're a murderer or something like that, you killed many people, you did so many crimes, you think automatically you're just going to go to heaven then? Doesn't matter. That means it doesn't matter what you do, you can do anything. But you just, at the end you're going to go to heaven. No, not necessarily. Maybe at some point you're going to go to heaven, but first of all you have to get reactions for that activity you just murdered so many people, you pillaged, you committed so much violence, you stole it. So do you think that the people who are very good and those other types of people, they will get the same type of results? No. But people are thinking, they're misunderstanding what is the whole world. This is a truly active. Generally people are on this path. Now, Vyasadeva, foreseeing, now before, there was no need of any written word. Everyone would just hear and remember. And the knowledge would be disseminated by the great sages and sadhus and gurus, and especially the transcendent knowledge, and also knowledge of how to live in the world. It would just, by word of mouth, and everyone would remember in the other ages. Everyone would remember. Krishna and Balaram went to the Gurukul of Sandipani Muni, and there was no reading of the book, and there was no text. They would just hear it, and they would remember. The memories were very good. But now, these days, we can't remember anything. Like, if I'm speaking now, and I ask you what I said 5 minutes out of you after you got out of this temple room, even I have what I said. Someone's asked me a question sometimes. Oh, I said that. So even myself, I'm speaking. So our memories are not so good. In the Kali Yuga, and it is said, and the prediction is in the Kali Yuga, it'll be diminishing. People won't remember from the, you know, one day to the next what happened. Due to the lifestyle and everything like that. Due to people's lifestyle, everything's becoming imbalanced. The prediction for the age of Kali, you won't have very good memory. Just imagine if you had such good memory. People would pay so much money to get good memory. You know, people, the students are studying very hard for the exam because all year they heard all the instructions, but they can't remember the times, so they have to study like crazy. What was taught before? They have to study revision of the work. Why? Because you can't remember. But formerly they would just be taught and they would remember. Of course, Krishna and Balaram, they didn't have to go to the Gurukul, they had the supreme. But just to show by example, they knew everything. Everything comes from them. But just to show that everyone should know. But now, in this age, Vyasadeva, he saw that the people of this age, their memories, their intelligence would be dulled. Memories will be short, and even their lives will be very short. They will be not very inclined to spiritual philosophy and all this stuff. The more people are more interested in just immediate sense gratification. You know, that's if you are just concerned with just immediate sense gratification, you're getting down to the animalistic level, because that's what the other species of life, they're just concerned with fulfilling their immediate urges. Where's food? You know, you've got your pack of hyenas or wild dogs or something like that. And what do they think? They're not planning out so many things very much. They're just fulfilling their immediate needs, their urges. I need to drink. I need to eat. I need to mate. And now I need to defend. Someone is here. I need to defend. So these are just like basic urges. That species, different species of, but the humans have something more. They utilize their little bit sharpened intelligence, advanced intelligence, to understand spiritual things. But in Kali Yuga, then basically, you know, 99% of the population is not using the higher intelligence, the finer intelligence, finer brain tissues to understand higher subject matters. Now they're more just interested in gross sense gratification. But it's very hard work, as Prabhupada points out here. Very, very hard work to do it. Because, you know, you want to enjoy it, but to get it, you have to work hard to get it. It just doesn't come on you. Just walking in the street, the enjoyment comes. Maybe every now and again something happens while you're karma, but generally people, to get anything, you have to work. You know, just to eat, you have to work, and it's so costly now to live, especially in the big cities. You know, if we go anywhere, everyone's complaining, you know, just to do the smallest thing, I have to pay so much money. Some godbrother of mine was complaining. Even now, these days, you know, you just go to the supermarket, you can't come out of there without spending $100. Even the basic things. Just like one devotee was telling me now, oh, even the taxi fares, you know, to come from the airport in Melbourne to here, it costs $50, $60, $70. Who has got that money? Now it said that 50% of the population of this country is struggling, like anything, hardly able to make their way through life. They're just thinking about basic things. They're having enough money for rent or mortgage payment, or you know, to own a house is a, you know, is a privilege of the more rich people. And they said that the rich people in this country, the rich, said the rich 5% of the people of the country, they control about 30-40% of the national economy. Besides the government, they control, I mean, as far as income. The rich 5%, they have so much, and the gap between the rich and the poor is what, and it's found in most countries around the world. I read a kind of a report. In most countries around the world, the gap between the rich and the poor is growing more. In some countries, there's no middle class. Like when I went to South America some years ago, the devotees were telling me, oh, here in these countries here, this practically middle class has disappeared. There's very rich and very poor. See, because the greed principle is very strong. People are just concentrating on sense gratification, drug sense gratification, and they are, and because ultimately it's not satisfying, they want more. Just like it is said, I read one report. What does the most thing, the number one thing a very rich man wants?
Money.
More money. They have so much money, but what do they want? Number one thing, they want more money. A very attached, the greed principle is very strong, especially in Kali Yuga. Greed, getting more and more, and they're not becoming less and less charitable. Less and less charitable. So therefore, those who are becoming richer, because somehow or other, by their karma, they're getting a lot of money. So because they've got a lot of money, they can make more money. But those who haven't got any money, they're just struggling. They can't make any more money. They're just struggling to get enough to live. So therefore, that gap is growing like anything. And middle class is disappearing in many countries of the world. Non-existent anymore. So this is the path of the fruitive activities. Enjoyment in the world. It is, and Prabhupada says it's not easy to get. It's a struggle. You have to work hard to buy the things that you need. And even when you get those things, you have to maintain them, work hard to keep them. Nothing maintains itself. Just like one brother told me that now I've got this house, it's non-stop around here. I have to fix the roof, I have to do the garden, I have to, something wrong inside, this breaks down, that breaks down, this is going to cost me so much money that I was better off before. Another one told me that when I first got married, we were going along, we had a little bit of money, but now after 30 years of marriage, he said that I'm worse off now than when I started. I had more money in the beginning. But now, you know, it was going good, and then something happened, and then, you know, we owed this and we owed that, and then I stood back from it all and I said, yeah, actually we were better off in the beginning. And when you have children, do some calculation. How much it costs to raise the children over the lifetime. I'm a huge amount, hundreds of thousands of dollars per child, something like that. I mean, it depends on the report, the particular report you read, how much exactly, and what they factor into it. But it's a lot of money. So to maintain a nice family. Of course, everyone has to live in the world. And, you know, they have to. But we should understand one thing. It's if you're going to live according to your karma, and So, and so, you know, Narada Muni said to Vyasa, you've described these things, and you've given the process by which, by living in the world, following the path of the karma, you can follow Varnashram system, and you know, live, do some performance in your Varna, in your ashram, do some samskaras, and be purified even while you're doing the fruitive activity, and make gradual progress. So you've described that. And you've described jnana kanda, understanding something transcendental, beyond the world. So that is beyond the world that someone can try to attain to. You've described these things. You've given in the jnana kanda section of the Veda, you've given information on that. But the jnana kanda section, that is not all in all. So, the Vaishnava understand there is a Brahman understanding of the energy and everything like that is one aspect of it. But you've described it, it is above a fruitive activity, but it's not fully satisfying action. Brahmati, Paramahmati, Bhagavan. So how to advance by studying this thing, you've given information. And but naishkaramyam apyakuta bhava and shobati jnana. So, but Brahman realization, Brahman understanding will not fully satisfy unless you come go further. What is beyond the Brahman? That is Krishna. That is a personality. Not material personality, spiritual. So these things have to be understood in context. If we can do our activities, not only following Varnashram, but dovetailing in devotional service, then the karma becomes karma yoga. As I was saying last night. The karma becomes karma yoga. So you're doing activities, but you're dovetailing activities in the service of the Supreme Personality. So karma becomes karma yoga. And if you're trying to understand what is Brahman and what is the energy, and you're dovetailing it, and how is that connected with the Supreme Personality, then the jnana becomes jnana yoga. Jnana yoga. And if you're trying to engage in devotional service directly, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Shravanam, I was saying, by chanting and hearing the leelas of Krishna, then this is called Bhakti and Bhakti Yoga. So this is the situation. And Narada Muni was, and we'll read how he's going to instruct in this one. He said, actually, ultimately, Bhakti Yoga is the highest. Someone who can directly engage in chanting, and hearing, and remembering, and offering prayers and doing service and so many things, they are the highest. But the other ones you cannot directly for some reason or other, due to attachment or due to other consideration, they want to follow the path of the karma. At least they can do the karma yoga. At least they can do the jnana yoga. They can do some actions and dovetail, leave up the results of the work and offer to Krishna. Then that is karma yoga. So, basically speaking, there's no difference between, say, for example, karma yoga and bhakti yoga, in one sense, because it is aimed at the Supreme Personality of God. But there is a difference also. It's a question of the quality of love. Karma yoga, you want to do activities and offer the results. But the bhakti yoga is the full surrender. So there's a difference in quality. Difference in karma yoga and bhakti yoga, basically the same thing, goal is the same. But the quality of surrender and love distinguishes bhakti yoga from the karma yoga. And one is very, very elevated in love of God and devotion, and pure love, then that is the bhakti yoga. So this is the ultimate goal. So Prabhupada says that disturbance in society, it is caused by a want of an ultimate goal. We don't have, and society doesn't have ultimate goal. They have immediate goals. Oh, I have to take the children to school, I have to go to work, and then next week they have a media goal. They have intermediate, you know, next year I plan to do this, and they have long term. After 5-10 years, then we'll buy the house, and then we'll do like that. So you have immediate, intermediate goals, and long term goals. But all of these things are temporary. So, but you have to have what is ultimate. What is your ultimate goal? Why are you living in the world? Why are you doing all these things? What is your ultimate goal? Unless you have an ultimate goal, then you will be confused, because immediate goals are changing all the time, and intermediate and long term, and they're changing all the time. You become confused and frustrated ultimately. Your immediate, intermediate, long term goals have to be anchored by your ultimate goal, and that is Krishna consciousness. If you have the ultimate goal, then immediate, intermediate, long-term goals can go in a direction to achieve the ultimate goal, which is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. So when you don't have the ultimate goal, then there's going to be disturbance. So first of all, you have to understand the ultimate goal. That is, and that's Naramuni will describe Vyasa. The ultimate goal is service to the Supreme Personality of God, understanding the form, the fame, the name, the pastime of the Supreme Personality. That is the ultimate goal, to come to that realization. If you have this ultimate goal, then all your other goals will just fall into line. And this is very, very important thing to understand. So I'll read this verse again. If anyone has any question, we can answer for a few minutes. Knowledge of self-realization, even though free from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of conception of the infallible God. What then is the use of fruitive activities, which are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature, if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord? Any questions? Well, the basic needs are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. We have our regular principles, which you refer to as the gambling. Not again. We don't indulge in gambling. But the basic needs are described, the four basic needs are described. We have our four regular principles. That's one. But the basic needs are eating, sleeping, mating, defending. These are the four basic needs. So humans do that. They eat, they sleep, they eat, they eat. So animals also eat, sleep, they eat, they eat. As regular principles, we follow these regular principles because they destroy other qualities. Meat eating, for example, destroys the quality of the mercy, intoxication, destroys the austerity, isn't it? And gambling destroys the truthfulness. And illicit sex destroys the cleanness. So we follow those principles for those reasons, because they destroy all these other good qualities. And that's why we follow those four regular principles. But as far as basic needs, described in the Prabhupada and the Shastras always describe, the four basic needs of all species of life, including human beings, is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So those things the animals do, humans do. But what else? The humans can do something else as well, understand spiritually. Whereas the other species are very difficult. They're just so involved and engrossed in eating, sleeping, mating, defending that you don't find that animals have an interest for spiritual things, you know, discussion or the chanting. Mm-hmm. Of course, they can be benefited by giving the Krishna prasad and chanting. You can have some dog, you give the dog or the cat some nice prasad, you let them hear the chanting. So they can be benefited, but they themselves, to initiate it themselves, that is generally not possible there. You don't find any dogs initiating any chanting, or cats or birds initiating any chanting, unless they're training. You know, one time we had a parrot, we had a cockatoo one time that we trained to chant Hare Krishna.
So it would chant.
It chanted like that. This was a cockatoo we had in New Zealand, the question. And he'd say, "Jai Ram." He would say, "Jai Ram." So the devotees trained to say Hari Bol and Jai Prabhupada and Hari Krishna. Every time a devotee walked past, it was that chant. But other times you would just fall. Anyway, so you can train it, and it can be benefited. But for them to initiate it, it's generally not possible. But human beings can initiate spiritual activity. That is the one thing that human beings have over and above the other species of life. So therefore, and it's God given to us. Krishna gives us that ability, and he wants us to use it. And if we don't use it, then that's very unfortunate. Really unfortunate. We're wasting an opportunity. So we should utilize the opportunity of the human form of life and try to understand what is the ultimate goal of our existence. Tathagata Brahmaji, inquire about the spiritual things. What is the ultimate goal of our existence? Why are we doing it? We just live, we enjoy in the world. The life goes past very quick. When you're young, of course, you think it's going to last forever. But as you get older, you know it's very quick. People these days, if they live 50, 60, 70 years old, in the former ages, they lived much longer, but in Kali Yuga, they lived very short lives. Some, they say people are living longer, but actually there's a lot of disease and killing people in some parts of the world. Life's short. Life's short, and it says, and the best thing is right from the very beginning of life, from the childhood, you can do the spiritual activities, just like our devotees, our parents should, try to encourage the children to do some chanting, hearing about Krishna stories and all these types of things. Because there's so much benefit for them, and if they have that right from their childhood, they remember those things throughout the whole life. We can remember things in our childhood that still stay with us because they were there in the childhood. And in our childhood, later on in life, it's more hard. You become, and it's always good. I mean, Prahlada, I said, right from the, when you're 5 and 6, and when you're young, teenagers, because later on in life, after you finish your education, you go to work, you become committed in so many ways. You have to conform and become committed. You have a job, you say you buy a house, you're just committed. And it's very difficult to change that, and even, it's not impossible, and we're finding all people from all different age brackets and different backgrounds come to Krishna consciousness, but it's certainly a little bit more difficult. But best to take it up in youth and practice it. And but if someone comes in later life, that's very good. Better late than never. So if someone comes, so any time of life is good, but if we can follow it in our youth and practice it, then we'll get some benefit. Any final questions?
Devotees are often giving praise to one another, and it comes across that this praise is actually praising their past credits for their karmic ability, such as, "Oh Prabhu, you're a very nice singer."
You're a very nice
singer. Or Prabhu, you're so good at cultivating people, like you're good at people skills. Or Prabhu, you're dancing so ecstatically. Physically able to dance ecstatically.
Yes, but any skills you have, whether it's as a devotee or even as a, before you were a devotee, are given to you by Krishna. So someone who's not a devotee, who's, he's a good doctor, or a good lawyer, or a good carpenter, or good communication skills, or good IT skills, they've got qualities, they've been trained in the world, and they have a certain talents right from through their life, that is given by Krishna. You're placed in a situation due to your karma, but the whole thing is given and arranged by Krishna. So, so one may have those skills before one is a devotee, and now one has come to devotional service and using those skills in the service of Krishna. So devotees are especially grateful and want to glorify, because now you have a skill. Before you were using just for material life, but now you're using in Krishna's service obviously. And of course, and Krishna can increase those. You know, many times we find that devotees didn't have so many skills before they became devotees. You know, just like when we come, we do so many different types of services. Sometimes we have to do cooking and go to the kitchen. Before I was a devotee, I didn't know any cooking practically. You have to pour some milk on some cornflakes. But I didn't know any cooking. But then all of a sudden, I had to go and learn from the cookbook and do some cooking in the kitchen. I had to make the rice, how to make the sabji, how to make the puri, how to make the pakora. I never knew those things before. So Krishna is inspiring us how to learn these things, how to do deity worship, how to do so many things in Krishna's service. So some skills you have from before, if you use them in devotional service, they're glorious. And so it's not wrong. It's not wrong to glorify someone because they're engaging in such a nice devotion. You're not glorifying per se the skill so much as you're glorifying that they're using the skill in Krishna's service. Or you have done such nice book distribution for Krishna. You have done such nice cooking for Krishna. That is what's being glorified, that you have to understand that. So whatever skill you have, whether it's before a devotee or during at the time as a devotee, is given by Krishna anyway, to the non-devotee and the devotee. But when someone uses it for Krishna, that becomes even more glorious, and the devotees like to thank other devotees for that. Of course, you have to be careful not to lay it on too thick, because actually it's mentioned in the Shastra, to over-glorify someone is not good either. To over-glorify. Just like some material people do in the material world, they over-pray that they want something. Have a dream along. They want something. There's a motive behind it. There's a reason behind it. So to overly praise, that is not good. But to praise just rightly, just nicely, that's why you're doing such nice, your cooking is so nice, you're doing it for Krishna. Prabhupada used to say. So we should understand in that context. So don't think it's just a material thing, just like everybody else is doing. No, it's because they're engaging in devotional service, then we appreciate it. So Krishna got very positive. As far as material life, we're not enthusiastic about material life, but spiritual life, there's many aspects to it, and many activities you can do spiritually, but the body is very enthusiastic about it. Someone else is doing it, oh, it's glorified, yes, it looks so nice. Jai Ho Boys to Srila Prabhupada, 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 Jai Ho Boys to Srila Prabh